Hello and welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Kenny Walter, Assistant Managing Editor of ACP Live. Today is World Hepatitis Awareness Day. And treatments for the hepatitis family of viruses have improved drastically in recent years, particularly for hepatitis C with the addition of direct-acting antivirals. That is why many in the field feel that eradication of HCV by 2030, or NOHEP 2030, is a realistic goal. But in order to achieve this lofty goal, a lot has to happen. For example, despite solid evidence that DAAs can be a game-changer for HCV care, access to medicine remains a hurdle in a lot of places around the world. And the COVID-19 pandemic may have only made these access gaps worse. In this episode of Doc Talk, I am joined by Dr. Bindu Balani, an infectious disease expert from Hackensack Meridian Health. Dr. Balani talks about how realistic NOHEP 2030 is and what can be done to eliminate some of the access issues that have been prevalent in medicine for decades. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Balani.
So the most important topic, I think, at this particular time is obviously accessing care for these cases where with hepatitis C, for example. So let's start with that first, and then we'll come to B and D later on. Yeah. But with hepatitis C, it is eradicable. So with treatments that we have today, we have a pan-genotypic, meaning that regardless of whatever subtype of hepatitis C you have, there is a chance of complete cure of eradication of this disease. So if you are able to be diagnosed and then screened for it and get access to somebody who's able to treat it, you can actually completely cure this virus. So with having that global 2030 as a mark of NOHEP, by that particular time, to reach that particular target, I think getting access to care and getting diagnosis of this particular disease is probably the most important thing. Once you make the diagnosis, getting linked to care is the next most important thing, right? So if you get diagnosis and just don't get linked to the care and you have hepatitis C and nothing does is done about it, that doesn't help either. So getting the access to a provider who's going to be able to treat you for hepatitis C is just as important as getting the screened treatments. The good part is that the treatment for hepatitis C is so simple nowadays. It's remarkably simple nowadays. So I would say 90%+ of patients, where the primary care patients, the primary care providers can actually provide that care easily and very effectively in their offices. So earlier on, we had a lot of barriers from insurance companies not being able to, you know, if the prescription's written by a non-ID or non-hepatologist, they wouldn't honor that. All that stuff is becoming less and less of a problem. So all those barriers to treatment are coming down. So if somebody has a relatively mild stage of disease, you can potentially treat them in your office regularly as an internal medicine doctor and be able to completely cure this disease. The application processes, the insurance approvals, all of those barriers which were an issue before are much more lenient at this point, which again makes access to care very, very simple. So provided we are able to screen these patients, get them linked to a particular provider if they don't have a primary care doctor or whatever else, get them to a primary care doctor, get them to a hepatologist, get them to an ID physician, and get them on the right medications approved for them. In a matter of 3 months, we are done with this treatment. 3 months after that particular treatment is done and if their virus is zero, which in, I would say, 97 to 98% of times is a cure rate in majority of patients, we have complete, you know, eradication of this virus for that particular patient with no further morbidity. So I think getting this treatment on board is just as important as any other preventative medicines that we have. Because, and again, I say preventative more from the cancer perspective, it is a disease which we can definitely get rid of with, and it causes liver damage and liver problems, but it also causes hepatocellular carcinoma. So hepatocellular carcinoma is a liver cancer that can occur from viral hepatitis. And if you can actually treat the infection, you can get rid of that, or you can prevent that particular cancer from happening because of more advanced liver disease. So I think it's really important to be able to screen it and then get access to care and get rid of it. In the last few years, because of the COVID pandemic, unfortunately, there were a lot of anxiety that was ridden with the patients not accessing care, which I can understand. You know, going back to March of 2020, it was tough. So, you know, those months of summer where it was, everything was chaotic, everything was unpredictable. It was okay for that particular time for the patients to kind of not access care if they're not feeling unwell. But at this point, you know, a lot has gone in to develop pathways to, you know, more proactively get these patients back in a very preventative way, in a very careful way, to prevent any other issues that can arise from them accessing the healthcare. So I think getting back into preventative medicine, getting back into accessing medical care is going to be the key going forward to get any of the other things that I talked about before to get into action. So I think trying to get back the people into care is just going to be just as important. So I think with that, I would say for hepatitis C, we have a very, very good options coming up with the medications that we have today. Regarding viral hepatitis B, again, viral hepatitis B is also something that can actually be present. You know, patients may not be aware of it at all. And it has to be accessed. It has to be actively screened for. And the recent guidelines that's come out is basically to have universal screening for hepatitis B also for these particular patients. So again, getting the providers aware of that particular screening process, number one, getting the patients back into medical care for preventative medicines, getting the patients screened for that particular disease, and getting access to, again, the treated who treats them. Now, with viral hepatitis B at the current time, majority of patients have a chronic disease or are inactive disease over a long period of times. But again, to really be able to understand the pathology of what's happening of viral hepatitis in the body, they still need to access care to be able to identify that. On the outward symptoms, they may have zero symptoms. But on the inside, we still have to kind of reassess as to how bad the liver stage is, what is the liver morbidity, what's happening in the liver per se. So I think getting the treater to diagnose and then appropriately stage disease is very, very important with hepatitis B. Hepatitis B managements, unfortunately, are not at par as what hepatitis C is at this point, but we are going towards it. We are going. There are newer studies that are currently around, which have very good early data to show that we may have possibilities of eradication down the road. It's not in the next 2 years or next 3 years, but down the road, we do anticipate hopefully in this decade to see some very positive, promising outcomes of treatments for even for hepatitis B patients. So I think getting, again, screened and access to and diagnosed is going to be just as important. Hepatitis B also causes cancer. Hepatitis B also causes hepatocellular carcinoma. So I think it's very, and one thing about hepatocellular carcinoma, which is different from B and or C, is the disease process, right? So in hepatitis C, usually patients are more far advanced. They have cirrhosis, they have bad end stage liver disease when they develop the cancer. But in case of hepatitis B, it is mostly even early onset or even you know, areas where the liver is not really damaged and yet you can develop a cancer because the virus itself can be oncogenic, can cause that particular cancer. So again, so with hepatitis B, it's also very important to screen them for liver cancers, regardless of how bad the liver is in that particular patient population. So I think even B is something that we really have to proactively look for. Regarding D, Delta, that's a more in the news nowadays, for hepatitis Delta, awareness is becoming a little bit more prominent. Why? Because we now know that the prevalence rates are actually much more than what we had predicted before. So again, I think it's probably a lack of awareness, a lack of, oh, there is no medications for it, so what are we going to do about it? Or, oh, it really doesn't cause any far advanced liver disease. But now looking back at the newer studies, we really do see an increased risk of liver disease, an increased risk of liver cancer, increased risk of liver cirrhosis in these patients, and really severe liver fulminant disease that can occur with hepatitis Delta. So again, once you have hepatitis B, only then you can get hepatitis Delta, because Delta requires the B to live. So I think the first step is getting B checked. And if B is positive, always going forward with that next step of checking for Delta to assess that particular care. So again, all of this can happen. And I would say all of this did take a back step in these last few years. But I think it's time. It's time to make people aware. It's time to make public aware. It's time to make providers aware of the need for screening and diagnosing these viral hepatitis Ds, so that we can actually proactively engage these patients in care to prevent long-term cases and problems.
Gotcha.
So that was my long answer for the whole thing.
No, it's all good. Just a couple questions off of that. One of the things you mentioned is that there's no initial studies, or we're beginning to look more at hepatitis B management. Do you think the advent of direct acting antivirals and some of the treatments for hepatitis C almost frees up, you know, the same minds that would be working on new hepatitis C treatments, now that we have a good handle on that, are kind of freed up and can now handle hepatitis B? Is that kind of what's going on?
So I would say it may be partly true, because you know, the Hep C, I think we've got very good control on. So yes, the research development have more time on their hands to assess that. But I would say it's partly untrue. Why? Because actually the current pathologies, or the current phases of treatments for hepatitis B were already set in motion even prior to the directly antiretrovirals thing. So I think the research for hepatitis B has been going on. It is just a different ballgame. It's just a different virus. And the trick to try and get that particular virus under our control is just very difficult because of the way that virus infects our liver cells. So I think it may be partly true that the research and development has now more time on the times to kind of diverge, you know, their attention to something else. But I think it's also a big part is just the virus and the difficulty in getting the right medicines for it so far.
Okay. Another thing I wanted to hit on is obviously we're talking about access to these treatments, access to screenings, access to doctors. Obviously the story is a lot different here and in Europe and in some of the more advanced, wealthier countries. But some of the developing countries and lower income countries, how difficult is it to get to eradicate hepatitis C when not everyone will have access to DAAs, and not everyone will have access to screenings, and not everyone will be able to prevent spread of the virus?
So I don't know the exact mechanics of it, but at least in the ballpark, I can just kind of say it will be difficult. It is not something that is not thought about by the global leaders. Also, in that phase, I think the pharmaceutical companies have actually done phenomenal in being able to give their medications for, you know, give the access of the local departments and local countries making their own drugs and having the access to that particular science. They've really given it away. In a very philanthropic way. And I think it's remarkable as to how much help that they have provided to the underdeveloped areas for the same reason. Is there still lack of care? I think, yes, there is. But with more and more access of the World Wide Web, I think has really helped not just, you know, the developed countries, but also the developing countries who have the access of having the internet access, et cetera, to be able to be aware of the availabilities of options that they have. So I think it is going to be tough to have the low capita income countries be able to access all the care. And there are still things like tuberculosis that they're dying from. They're dying from malaria. They're dying from, you know, the more routine stuff that is still up and about. That is probably higher priority for those health developing countries. But I think the push towards from the WHO for this global eradication is going to help, because that's going to make both the providers in the developing countries and the payers, as well as the pharmaceutical industries or other companies that can actually help in that particular eradication rate. So I think by having a goal set in front of you, we have the options of getting help to get that eradication goal and things. If that eradication goal wasn't even around, nobody would have thought twice about it. But at least now that we have this 2030 no HEP, you know, people are looking at it and saying, okay, what can we do? How can we be helped to get to that particular area? So I think having that goal set in front of us is really going to pursue and get this push towards the eradication.
Okay. And I guess where I'd like to close us out is, if I talked to you, let's say 5 or 10 years ago, would you have said that 2030 is a realistic goal, or did we make that much progress in the last couple of years?
I think since 2011, when the first medication pill came out, that was tough too with interferon. That was really tough. But the science picked up rapidly at that point. So I have to agree, probably not. Probably not. I've been doing viral hepatitis treatment since 2000 when I first joined Hackensack. So in that, you know, in these 22 years, it's night and day difference that has happened. And in the last 5 years, since the, you know, single drug regimens have been around, it's been 5 years, 2019, yeah, close to 5 years, 4 years, since these medications have been around, I think now we can think about having, okay, this is plausible. This is really plausible at this point. So having a small hitches with COVID, et cetera, that's a different story. And having some problems with getting patients to be seen for the treatments at this particular time is a little bit of a problem, but I think it's doable. I think we are going to get there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Is there anything else you want to say?
All I want to say is, you know, nowadays patients and public are very well aware of this disease process. And I think anything that we can do, anything that you can do to help make people aware to, hey, please ask your doctors to get checked for hepatitis B. Ask your doctors to get checked for hepatitis C and or D if it's B is positive. Have them proactively ask their providers, please, can you just check me once, just once for lifetime, if that's all you need to do. There is no stigma associated with this. It is a universal recommendation that's required at this point. So take that first step from the public perspective, you know, give the onus to the public also to come in forward and ask for that testing to be done. So I think if we can at least push that message through, I think that's going to be important. And from providers' perspective, we are around. If there's any concerns, we know, you know, you are more than welcome to call and speak to any of these providers who can help us and help you take care of this particular disease.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
I'd like to thank Dr. Bellany for joining me for the really important conversation about hepatitis care. And as always, thank you for listening. For more hepatitis coverage on World Hepatitis Day, check out acplive.com all day long. And as always, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.